At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Details at putnam.com. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Hey, how are you feeling? Not physically, although I hope you're well. I mean economically, with the news today that prices have taken one of their biggest jumps in 30 years. I don't know if this helps any, but the Federal Reserve feels your pain. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about the economy at Gather.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Today is Monday, the 4th of August. Great to have you here. You might not believe this, but Ben Bernanke really does have your best interests at heart, even if it seems like he's only ever worried about the big banks and the overall economy. Today is a great example. The Commerce Department released its latest figures on consumer spending this morning. The relevant detail is that it rose 0.6%. It's relevant because our spending drives 70% of what happens in this economy. But with higher prices for food, energy, and almost everything else, inflation has essentially zeroed that spending out. And that means that when the Federal Reserve meets to talk about interest rates tomorrow, our problems with high prices will be right at the top of their agenda. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
This may violate the laws of physics, but under the laws of economics, it's actually possible to have what's essentially become a whistling teapot full of lukewarm water. Even as the economy cooled off, food and energy prices kept on rising, and now inflation is threatening to boil over into other expenses. Still, household consumption surged in June, thanks in large part to those government rebate checks. But most Americans were left asking, what have we got to show for it?
We're spending a lot more money, but we're not getting as many goods and services as we had been.
Commerce Bank Chief Economist Joel Neroff says even core inflation, leaving out volatile food and energy costs, now exceeds the Federal Reserve's target of no more than 2% a year.
Inflation is clearly higher than they want it, but at the same time, the economy is not strong enough for them to attack the inflation problems.
Sometimes it can take a while for the pot to stop steaming, even when you've already turned down the heat. So Wachovia economist Adam York suggests the central bankers might want to wait for now.
We might be looking for some more hawkish language. The Fed may be looking to talk a big game about their worries on inflation. We don't think a rate change is in the cards.
Likewise, says Mark Zandi at MoodysEconomy.com, he's hopeful things are turning in the Fed's favor.
Already gasoline prices are receding, so I think looking forward, they probably feel a bit more comfortable. Even though they're not comfortable, they feel a bit more comfortable than they did a few weeks ago.
The interest rate policymakers will be deciding what they should do, if anything, tomorrow. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Just about everybody's expecting the Fed to keep short-term interest rates where they are tomorrow, 2% for the federal funds rate. The statement they make with the announcement is going to be the thing to watch, though, what they have to say about inflation and the threat to overall growth that it poses. It's old news by now. The times are tough for the auto industry. GM announced more job cuts last week, as we told you. Ford is cutting back production of trucks and SUVs. But maybe there's power in numbers, because today the Detroit News reported that the two companies might be teaming up to develop new engines. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports.
Back in the day, auto companies were their own worlds. They owned the steel plants, the parts makers, the whole thing. Nowadays, though, just because you drive a Chevy doesn't mean you're sitting on Chevy seats. Different parts are made by different companies. So the idea that Ford and GM would make an engine together isn't inconceivable. In fact, they've already collaborated on a 6-speed transmission. But such a partnership does say something about the state of the industry today. Bob Schultz follows autos for Standard & Poor's.
You know, again, with the industry challenges, these companies are really considering everything, if it makes sense, to save costs or speed development.
There are plenty of other tie-ups between auto companies. What would make this deal unique is that Ford and GM are the two largest domestic car makers and ostensibly lifelong rivals. And it could give Ford access to GM's Volt technology, a big help to Ford and a big cost savings to GM. Components like engines and transmissions are prime candidates for this kind of collaborative development. Greg Gardner is an analyst at Oliver Wyman.
These are very capital-intensive parts of the vehicle, and in order to drive that cost down, they would spread their respective investments and also hopefully drive down the cost of the consumer, because they would have potentially about twice as many customers.
The disadvantage would be if the two companies disagreed on the direction the new technology should take. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
With those food and energy costs I was talking about a minute ago, there aren't too many things left that you can get for a buck, even on McDonald's dollar menu, Marketplace's Rico Galliano explains.
I'll get to that, Kai, but first, the important news. McDonald's has a new Big Mac jingle.
Big Mac. All beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese.
Dang, that's funky. Now, what's not so funky for McDonald's is the ingredients listed in that jingle all cost more these days, especially the beef and cheese. Not a problem with a Big Mac. McDonald's could eventually charge a bit more for it. But if you have something called a dollar menu, the stuff on it should probably cost a dollar. Darren Tristano is with food industry consultants Technomic. He says some changes are in the works.
Right now, McDonald's is taking a look at their double cheeseburger and looking at one slice of cheese instead of two. They're testing the double hamburger versus the double cheeseburger.
Tristano says the changes are necessary. Fast food value items have a tiny profit margin. They're supposed to get customers in the door. Then the theory goes they'll buy pricier stuff. But not enough of those people are supersizing these days.
When people are purchasing one, two, three items instead of upgrading to other more expensive side items, these chains are losing money. Very likely this will shift and become more of a $1 to $1.50 menu, and possibly even upwards of $2.
Maybe fast food restaurants could follow Carl Jr.'s example. That chain features something they call the $6 burger. It only costs $4, but in an inflationary environment, the name allows for some wiggle room. In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Gogliano for Marketplace.
When Rupert Murdoch's News Corp reports profits tomorrow, newspaper analysts are going to look to see how the Wall Street Journal is doing. Television analysts will be looking at Fox. But a whole lot of people on Wall Street are going to be looking at MySpace. Murdoch paid more than $500 million for the social networking site a couple of years ago, but it has yet to really catch on with advertisers and with their money. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman explains.
What advertisers want is to put ads right in front of people who like something, let's say rock climbing or a specific rock band. That's what the band Coldplay did this summer. It targeted MySpace users who might come to its concerts. Ad exec Sean Muzzy of Neo at Ogilvy arranged the ads.
There's a tremendous amount of information that allows you to identify audiences within social networks because of the behaviors that the people are exhibiting.
News Corp is pushing this kind of hyper-targeted advertising on MySpace, but so far advertisers have been cautious. They don't want their ads showing up next to off-color content. Jeff Jarvis teaches journalism at the City University of New York. He says we're smarter than that.
We can figure out that if your ad ends up next to a flaming cat video, you're not in favor of setting cats on fire.
But MySpace users may be so busy watching that flaming cat video or talking to their friends about it, they won't even see the ads roll by. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Oil hit a 3-month low today, but the major indices didn't really seem to notice. It will be the sad music when we do the numbers. When the Olympics start this Friday, all the attention is going to be on the athletes. But the economic competition's been going on for months now. The Games are an advertising bonanza, a chance for sponsors to reach billions of potential customers worldwide. And that's only the television audience. Since this year's Olympics are in China, there's a whole nother billion potential shoppers to think about. And the key, as any marketing person worth his salt will tell you, is to localize your product. From Shanghai Marketplace's Scott Tong explains.
Quick lesson in Chinese breakfast food. China's version of the donut is called youtiao. It's a deep-fried, puffy strip of dough. And then zhou is rice porridge. It's comfort food that shows up in a couple places in China, street stalls, and... you guessed it, KFC. Welcome to fast food with Chinese characteristics, where your chicken sandwich comes drizzled in either barbecue sauce or Peking duck sauce. Here's Shanghai College student An Xiang.
KFC is more culturally Chinese than McDonald's. McDonald's seems like it's been copying the strategy lately, but they're already behind KFC.
In China, KFC is not the colonel, it's the king. It has 2,000 stores, double the number of McDonald's. And KFC adds one new restaurant every single day in the country. China Market Research founder Sean Ryan credits going native.
What China affords a lot of companies is the ability to reinvent itself. Brands can really tweak and localize and do very well.
And doing well matters now for multinationals struggling with a weak U.S. economy. Nike, Toyota, and Starbucks all see most of their expansions overseas in places like China.
There's an emerging 250 million strong middle class. These are people who love to consume. So what's happening now is China is becoming a market to sell into, not just a market to produce and then export.
So which Western products are selling well here? A quick trip to the local supermarket suggests a lot of Chinese buy green tea-flavored Crest toothpaste and Danone's cucumber and kiwi yogurt. John Chan of the consultancy China Street Smarts hangs out in the junk food aisle, ticking off the flavors of Lay's potato chips.
You know, like Sichuan hot pot and all these other things that local people understand. I have to look hard to find plain because there's another six or seven different flavors that I've got to try and dig through.
Western companies try to appeal not just to locals' taste buds, but also to their hearts. This Olympic season, that means cheering for the home team. One poll found 3 out of 4 Chinese consumers prefer a product linked to the Olympics. Which may be why this Pepsi ad screams, "Go China!" Rival Coca-Cola has a spot with national basketball hero Yao Ming. He's leading the torch relay. And Adidas portrays the Chinese volleyball team, perched on the shoulders of the Chinese masses. For the sports industry, the Olympics are an obvious time to make a China push. More and more consumers are moving from watching sports to playing sports. Just remember, China's different. Spalding Basketball's Robert Zucker notes there are no cul-de-sacs here.
We're just entering the backboard market here. Of course, there's not a lot of residential use, but every factory you go to here in China has a backboard system and backboard for their employees.
And as China evolves, Western companies will keep catering to local lifestyles and preferences. That'll mean more things like papaya-flavored gum. Cringe if you're a traditionalist, but think of how mortified the Italians must have felt when pizza came to America and morphed into a triple cheese Thai chicken disaster. Works for us. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
There comes a time in the course of hosting a radio program that you have to take one for the team. Today, it seems, is my time. A couple of weeks ago, we had a book come in the mail. It was called The Nonverbal Advantage by a consultant named Carol Kinsey Gohman. It was all about body language, as you might have gathered from the title, how you can use it to get ahead in the workplace. We figured it would be a pretty dull interview if we just chatted about the book over the phone, so we invited her down to L.A. and had her sit in on our morning news meeting, and then she and I sat down for a postmortem. So here we are sitting in our studios, and you just spent the morning in our morning meeting.
I did.
What'd you think about that little experience?
Well, I figure you guys have about a half hour where everybody is on the same page, paying attention, and then the fidgeting really starts.
Which is funny because the meeting lasts an hour. So,
exactly.
So that tells you how we use our time. On the whole issue of nonverbal cues, I mean, this was a very – we are a very verbal group. And I'd bet that most meetings are that way as well. Why are nonverbal cues then so important?
Well, nonverbal cues are really important because it's the emotional content of the message that you're sending nonverbally. So you're sending the facts verbally. But if you want to see how someone feels about what you said, or if someone wants to check about how you feel about what you said, they have to look up and get the nonverbal cues.
Rather than put one of my colleagues on the spot, let's talk about me for a second here.
Okay.
and how I did at this meeting.
Well, you can tell when you're getting bored or ready to close a meeting by the increased number of times you flip your pen.
So should I stop that? I mean, how do you train somebody in new behavior?
You know, I don't know that you need to stop that. It may be very good for your colleagues to know that this is about time to close down that section of the meeting, that you've heard enough and you want to get on to the next piece. It depends on what signal you want to send.
What should you avoid in a meeting? I mean, if you're going to start thinking about these things, what are some big no-nos that send the wrong signal?
Well, I think that even if you don't mean it, even if you're comfortable, when you cross your legs and cross your arms
at the same time,
time, it sends a signal of resistance or I don't like what you just said. It also, by the way, cuts your retention down to about 38%.
You mean how much you're paying attention in the meeting?
How much you're retaining of what you've heard in the meeting. So that you really need to be aware that your body and mind or brain are not on separate planets, that what you do with your body affects your brain, but it also, right or wrong, it sends a signal to the rest of the people in your group.
What about something I do in meetings all the time, which is lean back, way back in my chair like this, put my hands behind my head, and just kind of swivel on my chair a little bit. What do you take from that?
That is a high confidence posture. It also can be an arrogant or superiority posture.
You have doomed me. Tell me about the feet. You spoke earlier about the feet and crossed and uncrossed. Why are they so important?
Because they're the least trained part of the body. So feet are probably the most honest part of the body. They will bounce when you're nervous or happy. They will cross. They will do that ankle lock and pull back when you feel not included in a conversation or a meeting. They will. Your toes will turn up if you're seated and you get great news.
How do you, though, consciously retrain yourself out of these, well, let's call them bad nonverbal cues?
I think you start with, what is the message that I want to deliver?
Mm-hmm.
And then you think, am I doing things that are counter to that message or supportive of that message? Hidden hands, mm-hmm. hands below the table, all send a message of, I've got something I'm hiding. So you'd want to consciously know that so that you would take your hands and put them on top of the table or put them out.
Right.
The other thing that I do sometimes is go with an executive into a negotiation and I just sit and watch nonverbal behavior because the executive or the manager just gets wrapped up in what's going on with the verbal stuff and totally forgets what signals he or she may be sending and what the other parties are responding.
It's almost like you're spying.
It is. I love it.
The book by Carol Kinsey Gohman is called The Nonverbal Advantage. Carol, thanks so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
Coming up, selling stolen stuff for pennies online.
Teeth whitening strips, razor blades, items that you'd ordinarily think, well, you really can't make any profit by stealing and reselling those items. You can using e-fencing.
But first, let's do the numbers. Another drop in oil prices today was not quite enough to make investors feel better about the economy. The Dow Industrials moved down 0.3%, 42 points. Close at 11,284. The NASDAQ dropped 1.1%, 25 points to finish at 2285. The S&P 500 declined 0.9%. That's 11 points. Ended the day at 1249. Crude oil dipped below $120 a barrel for the first time in 3 months today. Settled at 121 and change. Oil stocks sputtered, though. ExxonMobil slipped almost 4%. ConocoPhillips slid 2%. Occidental Petroleum tanked more than 6% today. News of HSBC's woeful quarterly profit report spooked banks. Wachovia lost almost 10%. Washington Mutual sank 8.5% today. Dish Network got a lousy signal from investors. It transmitted a 3 2/3% loss on news that 25,000 subscribers dropped the satellite service in the second quarter. Bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note nudged up to 3.97%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace Entrepreneurship Reporting is supported by Lenovo, official computer partner of the Olympic Games. Lenovo dedicates 1% of income to support entrepreneurship and social ventures worldwide. Each song we choose for the rundown on Marketplace is there for a reason. If you hear one that resonates, you can find out what it is on our website. Head to marketplace.org and check out the songs on the right side of the screen. There's also a link to an online store where you can buy each song.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at events coming up Tuesday. President Bush arrives in South Korea, the Federal Reserve announces its decision on interest rates, and Peter D. Hart Research Associates releases a nationwide survey on teens. The research includes teens' opinions on everything from the presidential election to bullies at school. I'm Caitlin Carroll.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. You already bring your own food when you fly. Why not pillows and blankets, too? JetBlue announced today it's going to start charging $7 for them. That's only on flights that last longer than 2 hours. The good news is that what the airline calls eco-friendly blankets are made from fabric that repels stuff like dust mites and mold spores, and they come with a $5 coupon to Bed Bath & Beyond. Commentator and retail clerk Moira Mannion points out that passengers aren't getting gouged only at ticket counters and on the planes.
I work at an airport jewelry store where I convince clients to buy expensive jewelry that falls apart. I don't tell them that it falls apart. I'd like to say, that will be $375. By the way, the clasp will break in 2 days. Enjoy. Or maybe, these pearls are a matrix of European glass bead, then covered with 7 layers of crushed mother of pearl, which gives them that deep luster, which sounds impressive, except when it chips off a month from now and you see that they're big honking glass marbles covered with a tissue-thin layer of brittle pearl. Needless to say, I don't get my hourly wage and 3% commission for honesty. It's not easy to look in the mirror with a clear conscience after I've seen a guy happily spend $800 on a necklace as an anniversary gift for his wife, and I know it's not worth half that price. But is it any worse than selling cheeseburgers to the obese? People at McDonald's don't say to hefty customers, "Here's your change and a copy of Supersize Me. I hope I never see you here again." I can try to justify it by thinking, "Let the buyer beware." Except, how can they be aware if no one tells them? At prices like ours, people automatically assume they're getting their money's worth. If earrings cost $300, they must be well made, right? What's worse is when clients return, broken jewelry in hand. They demand to know what I'm going to do about it. But I can't do anything except smile and say that we can repair it for a $35 fee. My mother didn't raise me to be a scam artist, so there was only one solution for me. I quit. I now work at a coffee shop in the same airport. I'm paid less, but I earn great satisfaction in seeing cranky, tired customers get a smile from their coffee, like big toddlers with sippy cups. But now I have a new moral conundrum. I don't think these big, happy toddlers know how much fat and sugar are in their sippy cups, and I'm not allowed to tell them.
Moira Mannion works at the airport in Minneapolis, St. Paul. You can send us your thoughts. Marketplace.org is our website. Click on the link that says Contact. Even though crude was down today, oil is still way higher than where it was this year last year at this time, rather, and that has helped spread inflation throughout the whole economy. If you look closely, you can find some pretty good bargains out there. Online is a good place to start. But did you ever wonder why some of the prices you find on the web are so low? Marketplace's Renita Jablonski explains the internet has brought a whole new meaning to the words hot property.
I was actually told to shop online during work hours. Sweet. Here we go. Let's see. First to the Apple website to see how much a new iPod Nano costs. All right. A 4 GB Nano goes for $149. Now to eBay. Oh, wow. All right. Here's one for $61. Here's one for $85. Joseph LaRocca tells me to take a closer look.
When someone has this seemingly unlimited supply of iPods at half the retail price, one has to question, where did these goods come from?
LaRocca is vice president of loss prevention for the National Retail Federation. He says some of those iPods could be stolen. LaRocca says selling stuff out of the back of a truck is old school fencing. Now it's e-fencing. He says thieves can take advantage of the trust that customers have in sites like eBay and Overstock.com. They can sell to people all over the world, and they never have to show their faces.
The risk for the criminal has gone down, and the profit for the criminal has gone up.
Because now, you can fence anything. Michael Ward is in the Assets Protections Department at Target.
Teeth whitening strips, razor blades, items that you'd ordinarily think, well, you really can't make any profit by stealing and reselling those items. You can using e-fencing.
The National Retail Federation says businesses lose more than $30 billion a year to theft. It estimates up to half the take ends up on the internet, and retailers are pushing for regulation. Bring that up with Steve Del Bianco, and you can almost hear his eyes rolling. Del Bianco is executive director of NetChoice, a coalition of tech companies and online consumers. He says attempts to regulate e-commerce are meant to scare consumers into thinking online bargains are shady. Just because something's cheap, it doesn't mean it's stolen.
It's really about competition prevention. It's an organized effort by big box retailers, I think, to squash competition from other angles.
Legislation before Congress would make sites like eBay liable for selling stolen items. That may be a tough sell. Earlier this summer, a federal court ruled against Tiffany & Company and found eBay is not responsible for tracking counterfeits on the site. A judge said when Tiffany identifies fakes, eBay responds quickly. eBay attorney Edward Torporco says the same is true for stolen goods.
eBay already has an unmatched record of proactively working with law enforcement to prosecute individuals who engage in illegal conduct on the site.
Retailers say they need better access to the personal information of high-volume sellers, like their real names and addresses. They say that would make it easier to build a case against questionable dealers. Back to my iPod browsing online, the Retail Federation's Joseph LaRocca admits it's hard to tell whether I'm looking at something stolen.
There are legitimate reasons why someone might be selling a case of iPods.
In the world of e-fencing, it's not easy to tell the difference between a good deal and a steal. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering more of what you want in a retirement plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note to send you on your way today. You remember when you were taking driver's ed back in high school and the instructor over in the passenger seat had an extra brake pedal just in case you didn't see the stop sign or maybe the pedestrian? Nissan has come up with something similar to help you save gas. The company said today it's developing what it calls an eco pedal. It's a gas pedal that'll push back against your foot if it senses too much pressure or if you're driving inefficiently. Never fear, though. The company says when the thing hits the market in next year's models, it's going to have an on-off switch so you can flip it if you really have to get going someplace. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow lost 42 points, 0.3%. The NASDAQ dropped 25 points, 1.1%. The S&P 500 fell 11 points. That's 0.9% there. Our producers include Caitlin Carroll, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Coming up next time on the program, doctors tackle the complicated system of elder care.
sometimes I refer to it as a quarterback, but it's kind of more than a quarterback, and it's kind of like almost like a head coach. You know, it's really coordinating things, it's communicating, it's getting everybody on board.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
Oscar Gomez was a Chicano student activist in the 90s, a radio DJ, and a rising star.
He was fire. He was charisma incarnate. Everyone had a crush on him.
He was a voice of people who didn't have a voice.
Until his sudden and mysterious death. What happened to Oscar? Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.